The Secret Adversary, Agatha Christie. Chapter 14, A Consultation. Nothing was more surprising and bewildering to Tuppence than the ease and simplicity with which everything was arranged, owing to Sir James's skillful handling. The doctor accepted quite readily the theory that Mrs. Vandermeer had accidentally taken an overdose of chloral. He doubted whether an inquest would be necessary. If so, he would let Sir James know. He understood that Mrs. Vandermeer was on the eve of departure for abroad, and that the servants had already left. Sir James and his young friends had been paying a call upon her when she was suddenly stricken down, and they'd spent the night in the flat, not liking to leave her alone. Did they know of any relatives? They didn't, but Sir James referred him to Mrs. Vandermeer's solicitor. Shortly afterwards, a nurse arrived to take charge, and the other left the ill-omened building. "And what now?" asked Julius, with a gesture of despair. "I guess we're down and out for good." Sir James stroked his chin thoughtfully. "No," he said quietly. "There's still the chance that Dr. Hall may be able to tell us something." "Gee, I'd forgotten him." "The chance is slight, but it must not be neglected. I think I told you that he's staying at the Metropole. I should suggest that we call upon him there as soon as possible. Shall we say after a bath and breakfast?" It was arranged that Tuppence and Julius should return to the Ritz and call for Sir James in the car. This program was faithfully carried out, and a little after 11 they drew up before the Metropole. They asked for Dr. Hall, and a page boy went in search of him. In a few minutes, the little doctor came hurrying towards them. "Can you spare us a few minutes, Dr. Hall?" said Sir James pleasantly. "Let me introduce you to Miss Cowley. Mr. Hersheimer, I think you already know." A quizzical gleam came into the doctor's eye as he shook hands with Julius. "Ah, yes, my young friend of the tree episode. Ankle all right, eh? I guess it's cured owing to your skillful treatment, Doc. And the heart trouble, ha ha." "Still searching," said Julius briefly. "To come to the point, can we have a word with you in private?" asked Sir James. "Certainly. I think there's a room here where we shall be quite undisturbed." He led the way, and the others followed him. They sat down, and the doctor looked inquiringly at Sir James. "Dr. Hall, I'm very anxious to find a certain young lady for the purpose of obtaining a statement from her. I have reason to believe that she's been at one time or another in your establishment at Bournemouth. I hope I'm transgressing no professional etiquette in questioning you on the subject. I suppose it's a matter of testimony?" Sir James hesitated a moment, then he replied, "Yes." "I shall be pleased to give you any information in my power. What's the young lady's name?" "Mr. Hersheimer asked me. I remember..." He half turned to Julius. "The name," said Sir James bluntly, "is really immaterial. She would be almost certainly sent to you under an assumed one. But I should like to know if you're acquainted with a Mrs. Vandermeer." "Mrs. Vandermeer, of 20 South Audley Mansions? I know her slightly." "You're not aware of what has happened." "What do you mean?" "You do not know that Mrs. Vandermeer is dead?" "Dear, dear, I had no idea of it. When did it happen?" "She took an overdose of chloral last night."
"Purposely?"
"Accidentally, it's believed. I should not like to say myself. Anyway, she was found dead this morning."
"Very sad. A singularly handsome woman. I presume she was a friend of yours, since you're acquainted with all these details."
"I am acquainted with the details because, well, it was I who found her dead."
"Indeed," said the doctor, starting.
"Yes," said Sir James, and stroked his chin reflectively. "This is very sad news. But you'll excuse me if I say that I don't see how it bears on the subject of your inquiry."
"It bears on it in this way. Is it not a fact that Mrs. Vandermeer committed a young relative of hers to your charge?"
Julius leaned forward eagerly.
"That is the case," said the doctor quietly, "under the name of Janet Vandermeer. I understood her to be a niece of Mrs. Vandermeer's.
And she came to you,
as far as I can remember, on June or July of 1915.
Was she a mental case?
She's perfectly sane, if that's what you mean.
I understood from Mrs. Vandermeer that the girl had been with her on the Lusitania when that ill-fated ship was sunk and had suffered a severe shock in consequence.
We're on the right track, I think. Sir James looked around.
As I said before, I'm a mutt, returned Julius.
The doctor looked at them all curiously.
You spoke of wanting a statement from her, he said.
Supposing she's not able to give one.
What?
You've just said that she's perfectly sane.
So she is.
Nevertheless, if you want a statement from her concerning any events prior to May 7th, 1915, she'll not be able to give it to you.
They looked at the little man, stupefied.
He nodded cheerfully.
It's a pity, he said. A great pity, especially as I gather, Sir James, that the matter is important. But there it is. She can tell you nothing.
But why, man? Darn it all, why?
The little man shifted his benevolent glance to the excited young American.
Because Janet Vandermeer is suffering from a complete loss of memory.
What?
Quite so. An interesting case. A very interesting case. Not so uncommon, really, as you would think. But there are several very well-known parallels. It's the first case of the kind that I've had under my own personal observation, and I must admit that I've found it of absorbing interest. There was something rather ghoulish in the little man's satisfaction.
And she remembers nothing, said Sir James slowly.
Nothing prior to May 7th, 1915. After that date, her memory is as good as yours or mine.
Then the first thing she remembers is landing with the survivors.
Everything before that's a blank. She didn't know her own name, or where she'd come from, or where she was. She couldn't even speak her own tongue.
But surely all this is most unusual, put in Julius.
No, my dear sir, quite normal under the circumstances. Severe shock to the nervous system. Loss of memory proceeds nearly always on the same lines. I suggested a specialist, of course. There's a very good man in Paris, makes a study of these cases. But Mrs. Vandermeer opposed the idea of publicity that might result from such a course.
I can imagine she would, said Sir James grimly.
I fell in with her views. There's a certain notoriety given to these cases, and the girl was very young, 19, I believe. It seemed a pity that her infirmity should be talked about, might damage your prospects. Besides, there's no special treatment to pursue in such cases. It's really a matter of waiting.
Waiting?
Yes. Sooner or later, the memory will return, as suddenly as it went. But in all probability, the girl will have entirely forgotten the intervening period, and will take up life where she left off, at the sinking of the Lusitania.
And when do you expect this to happen?
The doctor shrugged his shoulders.
That I cannot say. Sometimes it's a matter of months. Sometimes it's been known to be as long as 20 years.
Sometimes another shock does the trick. One restores what the other took away.
Another shock, eh? Said Julius thoughtfully.
Exactly. There was a case in Colorado.
The little man's voice trailed on, voluble, mildly enthusiastic.
Julius didn't seem to be listening.
He had relapsed into his own thoughts and was frowning. Suddenly, he came out of his brown study and hit the table such a resounding bang with his fist that everyone jumped, the doctor most of all.
I've got it! I guess, Doc, I'd like your medical opinion on the plan I'm about to outline. Say Jane was to cross the herring pond again, and the same thing was to happen. The submarine, the sinking ship, everyone to take to the boats, and so on. Wouldn't that do the trick? Wouldn't it give a mighty big bump to her subconscious self, or whatever the jargon is, and start it functioning again right away?
A very interesting speculation, Mr. Herzheimer. In my own opinion, it would be successful. It's unfortunate that there's no chance of the conditions repeating themselves, as you suggest. Not by nature, perhaps, Doc, but I'm talking about art.
Art?
Why, yes. What's the difficulty?
Hire a liner.
A liner? Murmured Dr. Hall faintly.
Hire some passengers. Hire a submarine. That's the only difficulty, I guess.
Governments are apt to be a bit hidebound over their engines of war. They won't sell to the first comer. Still, I guess that can be got over. Ever heard of the word graft, sir? Well, graft gets there every time. I reckon that we shan't really need to fire a torpedo. If everyone hustles round and screams loud enough that the ship is sinking, it ought to be enough for an innocent young girl like Jane. By the time she's got a life belt on her and is being hustled into a boat, with a well-drilled lot of artistes doing the hysterical stunt on deck, why, she ought to be right back where she was in May 1915. How's that for the bare outline?
Dr. Hall looked at Julius.
Everything that he was for the moment incapable of saying was eloquent in that look.
No, said Julius, in answer to it, I'm not crazy. The thing's perfectly possible. It's done every day in the States for the movies. Haven't you seen trains in collision on the screen? What's the difference between buying up a train and buying up a liner? Get the properties, and you can go right ahead.
Dr. Hall found his voice.
But the expense, my dear sir, his voice rose. The expense! It would be colossal!
Money doesn't worry me any, explained Julius simply.
Dr. Hall turned an appealing face to Sir James, who smiled slightly.
Mr. Herzheimer's very well off.
Very well off indeed.
The doctor's glance came back to Julius with a new and subtle quality in it. There was no longer an eccentric young fellow with a habit of falling off trees. The doctor's eyes held the deference accorded to a really rich man.
Very remarkable plan. Very remarkable, he murmured.
The movies, of course. Your American word for the kinema.
Very interesting.
I fear we're perhaps a little behind the times over here in our methods. And you really mean to carry out this remarkable plan of yours?
You bet your bottom dollar I do.
The doctor believed him, which was a tribute to his nationality.
If an Englishman had suggested such a thing, he would have had grave doubts as to his sanity.
I cannot guarantee a cure, he pointed out. Perhaps I ought to make that quite clear.
Sure, that's all right, said Julius. You just trot out Jane and leave the rest to me.
Jane?
Miss Janet Vandemeyer, then. Can we get on the long distance to your place right away and ask them to send her up? Or shall I run down and fetch her in my car?
The doctor stared.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Herzheimer. I thought you understood.
Understood what?
That Miss Vandemeyer is no longer under my care.
Chapter 15. Tuppence receives a proposal.
Julius sprang up.
What?
I thought you were aware of that.
When did she leave?
Let me see. Today's Monday, isn't it? It must have been last Wednesday.
Why, surely, yes. It was the same evening that you fell out of my tree.
That evening?
Before or after?
Let me see. Oh,
yes, afterwards.
A very urgent message arrived from Mrs. Vandemeyer. The young lady and the nurse who was in charge of her left by the night train.
Julius sank back again into his chair.
Nurse Edith, left with a patient.
I remember, he muttered.
My God, to have been so near.
Dr. Hall looked bewildered.
I don't understand. Is the young lady not with her aunt, after all?
Tuppence shook her head.
She was about to speak when a warning glance from Sir James made her hold her tongue. The lawyer rose.
I'm much obliged to you, Hall. We're very grateful for all you've told us. I'm afraid we're now in the position of having to track Miss Vandemeyer anew. What about the nurse who accompanied her?
I suppose you don't know where she is. The doctor shook his head. We've not heard from her, as it happens. I understood she was to remain with Mrs. Vandermeer for a while. But what can have happened? Surely the girl's not been kidnapped.
That remains to be seen, said Sir James gravely.
The other hesitated.
You don't think I ought to go to the police?
No, no. In all probability, the young lady's with other relations.
The doctor was not completely satisfied, but he saw that Sir James was determined to say no more, and realized that to try and extract more information from the famous KC would be a mere waste of labor. Accordingly, he wished them goodbye, and they left the hotel. For a few minutes, they stood by the car talking.
How maddening, cried Tuppence. To think that Julius must have been actually under the same roof with her for a few hours.
I was a darned idiot, muttered Julius gloomily.
You couldn't know, Tuppence consoled him.
Could he? She appealed to Sir James.
I should advise you not to worry, said the latter kindly. No use crying over spilt milk, you know.
The great thing is what to do next, added Tuppence, the practical.
Sir James shrugged his shoulders.
You might advertise for the nurse who accompanied the girl. That's the only course I can suggest. And I must confess I do not hope for much result. Otherwise, there's nothing to be done.
Nothing, said Tuppence blankly.
And Tommy?
We must hope for the best, said Sir James.
Oh, yes. We must go on hoping.
But over her downcast head, his eyes met Julius's, and almost imperceptibly, he shook his head.
Julius understood.
The lawyer considered the case hopeless.
The young American's face grew grave.
Sir James took Tuppence's hand.
You must let me know if anything further comes to light. Letters will always be forwarded.
Tuppence stared at him blankly.
You're going away?
I told you. Don't you remember?
To Scotland.
Yes, but I thought...
The girl hesitated.
Sir James shrugged his shoulders.
My dear young lady, I can do nothing more, I fear. Our clues have all ended in thin air. You can take my word for it that there's nothing more to be done. If anything should arise, I shall be glad to advise you in any way I can.
His words gave Tuppence an extraordinarily desolate feeling.
I suppose you're right, she said.
Anyway, thank you very much for trying to help us.
Goodbye.
Julius was bending over the car. A momentary pity came into Sir James's keen eyes as he gazed into the girl's downcast face.
Don't be too disconsolate, Miss Tuppence, he said in a low voice.
Remember, holiday time isn't always all playtime. One sometimes manages to put in some work as well.
Something in his tone made Tuppence glance up sharply. He shook his head with a smile.
No, I shan't say any more.
Great mistake to say too much. Remember that. Never tell all you know, not even to the person you know best. Understand?
Goodbye.
He strode away.
Tuppence stared after him.
She was beginning to understand Sir James's methods. Once before, he'd thrown her a hint in the same careless fashion.
Was this a hint?
What exactly lay behind those last brief words? Did he mean that, after all, he had not abandoned the case, that secretly he would be working on it still, while...
Her meditations were interrupted by Julius, who adjured her to get right in.
You're looking kind of thoughtful, he remarked as they started off.
Did the old guy say anything more?
Tuppence opened her mouth impulsively and then shut it again.
Sir James's words sounded in her ears.
Never tell all you know, not even to the person you know best.
And like a flash, there came into her mind another memory.
Julius, before the safe in the flat, her own question, and the pause before his reply.
Nothing.
Was there really nothing?
Or had he found something he wished to keep to himself? If he could make a reservation, so could she. "Nothing particular," she replied. She felt, rather than saw, Julius throw a sideways glance at her. "Say, shall we go for a spin in the park?"
"If you like."
For a while they ran on under the trees in silence. It was a beautiful day. The keen rush through the air brought a new exhilaration to Tuppence. "Say, Miss Tuppence, do you think I'm ever going to find Jane?"
Julius spoke in a discouraged voice. The mood was so alien to him that Tuppence turned and stared at him in surprise.
He nodded. "That's so. I'm getting down and out over the business. Sir James today hadn't got any hope at all. I could see that. I don't like him. We don't gee together somehow. But he's pretty cute. And I guess he wouldn't quit if there was any chance of success. Now, would he?"
Tuppence felt rather uncomfortable, but clinging to her belief that Julius also had withheld something from her, she remained firm.
"He suggested advertising for the nurse," she reminded him.
"Yes," with a forlorn hope flavor to his voice. "No, I'm about fed up. I've half a mind to go back to the States right away."
"Oh, no," cried Tuppence. "We've got to find Tommy."
"I sure forgot Beresford," said Julius contritely. "That's so. We must find him. But after, well, I've been daydreaming ever since I started on this trip. And these dreams are rotten poor business. I'm quit of them. Say, Miss Tuppence, there's something I'd like to ask you."
"Yes?"
"You and Beresford. What about it?"
"I don't understand you," replied Tuppence with dignity, adding rather inconsequently, "And anyway, you're wrong."
"You got a sort of kindly feeling for one another?"
"Certainly not," said Tuppence with warmth. "Tommy and I are friends, nothing more."
"I guess every pair of lovers has said that sometime or another," observed Julius.
"Nonsense," snapped Tuppence. "Do I look the sort of girl that's always falling in love with every man she meets?"
"You do not. You look like the sort of girl that's mighty often getting fallen in love with."
"Oh," said Tuppence, rather taken aback. "That's a compliment, I suppose."
"Sure. Now let's get down to this. Supposing we never find Beresford and...
"All right, say it. I can face facts. Supposing he's dead."
"Well?"
"And all this business fiddles out. What are you going to do?"
"I don't know," said Tuppence forlornly.
"You'll be darn lonesome, you poor kid."
"I shall be all right," snapped Tuppence with her usual resentment of any kind of pity.
"What about marriage?" inquired Julius. "Got any views on the subject?"
"I intend to marry, of course," replied Tuppence. "That is, if..." She paused, knew a momentary longing to draw back, and then stuck to her guns bravely. "I can find someone rich enough to make it worth my while. That's frank, isn't it? I dare say you despise me for it."
"I never despise business instinct," said Julius. "What particular figure have you in mind?"
"Figure?" asked Tuppence, puzzled. "Do you mean tall or short?"
"No, sum. Income."
"Oh, I haven't quite worked that out."
"What about me?"
"You?
Sure thing."
"Oh, I couldn't."
"Why not?"
"I tell you, I couldn't."
"Again, why not?"
"It would seem so unfair."
"I don't see anything unfair about it. I call your bluff, that's all. I admire you immensely, Miss Tuppence, more than any girl I've ever met. You're so darn plucky. I'd just love to give you a real rattling good time. Say the word, and we'll run round right away to some high-class jeweler and fix up the ring business."
"I can't," gasped Tuppence.
"Because of Beresford?"
"No, no, no!"
"Well then?"
Tuppence merely continued to shake her head violently. "You can't reasonably expect more dollars than I've got."
"Oh, it isn't that," gasped Tuppence, with an almost hysterical laugh. "But thanking you very much, and all that, I think I'd better say no."
I'd be obliged if you'd do me the favor to think it over until tomorrow. It's no use. Still, I guess we'll leave it like that.
Very well, said Tuppence meekly. Neither of them spoke again until they reached the Ritz. Tuppence went upstairs into her room. She felt morally battered to the ground after the conflict with Julius's vigorous personality. Sitting down in front of the glass, she stared at her own reflection for some minutes.
Fool, murmured Tuppence at length, making a grimace. Little fool. Everything you want. Everything you've ever hoped for. And you go and bleat out, no, like an idiotic little sheep. It's your one chance. Why don't you take it? Grab it. Snatch at it. What more do you want?
As if in answer to her own question, her eyes fell on a small snapshot of Tommy that stood on her dressing table in a shabby frame. For a moment, she struggled for self-control, and then, abandoning all presence, she held it to her lips and burst into a fit of sobbing.
Oh, Tommy, Tommy, she cried, I do love you so, and I may never see you again.
At the end of 5 minutes, Tuppence sat up, blew her nose, and pushed back her hair.
That's that, she observed sternly. Let's look facts in the face. I seem to have fallen in love with an idiot of a boy who probably doesn't care two straws about me.
Here she paused. Anyway, she resumed, as though arguing with an unseen opponent, I don't know that he does. He'd never have dared to say so. I've always jumped on sentiment, and here I am being more sentimental than anybody. What idiots girls are. I've always thought so. I suppose I shall sleep with this photograph under my pillow and dream about him all night. It's dreadful to feel you've been false to your principles.
Tuppence shook her head sadly as she reviewed her backsliding. I don't know what to say to Julius, I'm sure. Oh, what a fool I feel. I'll have to say something. He's so American and thorough. He'll insist upon having a reason. I wonder if he did find anything in that safe.
Tuppence's meditations went off on another tack. She reviewed the events of last night carefully and persistently. Somehow, they seemed bound up with Sir James's enigmatical words. Suddenly, she gave a great start. The color faded out of her face. Her eyes, fascinated, gazed in front of her. The pupils dilated.
Impossible, she murmured. Impossible! I must be going mad even to think of such a thing. Monstrous!
Yet, it explained everything. After a moment's reflection, she sat down and wrote a note, weighing each word as she did so. Finally, she nodded her head as though satisfied and slipped it into an envelope which she addressed to Julius. She went down the passage to his sitting room and knocked at the door. As she had expected, the room was empty. She left the note on the table. A small page boy was waiting outside her own door when she returned to it.
Telegram for you, miss.
Tuppence took it from the salver and tore it open carelessly. Then she gave a cry.
The telegram was from Tommy.